And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to a Sunday night edition of the Warriors All 82 podcast. 2-0 weekend for the Warriors, Marcus. Which of the two wins impressed you more? Nets at home with a Steph Curry, you know, laser show in the fourth quarter to drag them across the finish line, or a win in Portland on the backside of a back-to-back where Steph Curry has 7 points? Doesn't hit a three for the first time in 269 games, I guess. And they still win in Portland, but they blew a 22-point lead along the way and still won.
Yeah, like as far as like impressive, I got to go with the Nets game. The Warriors are just their most impressive when Steph is playing like Steph.
Also, the Nets are better. Right? Like, I mean, Nets are...
Yeah, and Nets are a good team, but like... The peak of the Warriors is when Steph is scoring 16 in the fourth quarter, and it's just like the show and the grandeur. Most important, the most like impactful, or the most hopeful for their ability to turn this thing around to me was tonight's game against Portland. It was a Klay Thompson and Andrew Wiggins performance. Like that's what saved them. TJD obviously. Was huge, but like we've said this for weeks now, they just need Klay Thompson and they need Andrew Wiggins to be good. Klay continued his better play, right? He shot the ball well. He had a few possessions where he was trying to do too much, but he reined himself in. But like the story of the night was Wiggins, man. Wiggins finally looked like Wiggins. That was the best he's looked since, what was that? He had like 31 games?
No, so Wiggins had two really big games. Wiggins at home against the Thunder on a game they lost, right? Because Chet hits the fadeaway three and then Shea dominates in overtime. Like, that was actually a really well-played game by the Warriors, if you remember.
Yeah,
and Wiggins had not only 31, but he hit 5 threes, including 4 fourth-quarter threes, and hit the three with 1.6 seconds left. That was going to be
a huge three that they thought was the game winner.
It was going to be the hero shot, right? Like, they celebrated it, and then Chet hits it. So he has that game, and then I think it's like 2 games later, he has the game in Sacramento, which the meltdown happens, but he has 29.
No, that was more like four. I think that was like 4 games later, but yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Okay, regardless, he's had like two.
I forgot about that game. Yeah.
Well, you want to know, so he has the tip in too, like that puts him up 5, and you think seals it after Moody gets benched. I mean, that game had like 95 different things that were going on, if you remember it. I felt coming out of that game, like while there was such a meltdown and you felt like, you know, stuff was crumbling, it was like, man, Wiggins is like kind of really playing well. He had actually played either decent to great in like 4 out of like 5 games. And then the next morning he slams his finger in the car door and misses a couple games, comes back, can't dribble the ball, can't shoot. And then you're like, all right, he's back to what he was early in the season. Gets benched for a rookie, by the way, which is like kind of a, you know, wild subplot of the season. And then has played, I would say played well both games this weekend, but really today, I mean, you mentioned it. Let me find the exact stat line he finished with. But, I mean, I think the big thing is, you know, he played all 12 fourth-quarter minutes tonight. He had 10 in the fourth. He finished with 25. I'm looking now 9 of 12, 4 of 6 from 3. Hit some big shots, 7 rebounds, 4 defensive rebounds in the fourth quarter. You know, 1 block. I think he had a steal, too. Just, like, that's what you need from him.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. He had 31 against Oklahoma City. He was 3 for 10 against Houston. They won that game, though. That was the home game against Houston. I think the dud where they kind of needed him was at Phoenix, where he was like 4 for 11. And then he didn't play that, you know, 4 for 10 against San Antonio. Then the sack game. So, yeah, He definitely was playing better, though. It was
at that time, 4 of 10 was solid Wiggins game tonight.
And he was rebounding, right? Yeah, he did. He was on the boards.
You felt like he was trending positively.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you feel like it was just a smash? Do you think you felt like it was just like the feeling in his hand?
I do. I will say this. I don't know. And he kind of downplayed it, but you know, Wiggins, he kind of downplays everything. But I do remember him going to warm up in L.A. It was the second game he missed after slamming his finger in the car door. And he was just like, he was wearing a wrap on his finger. And he was just like telling me it was just like tough to shoot, tough to feel the ball. I don't know. You've played basketball before. I would say if you like slam your finger in a car door, like your touch would be off for a week, right? Even once you came back.
I also think his defense has been better. It's an interesting development because oddly enough, him coming off the bench is like actually hurting Jonathan Kuminga. Like he's playing well enough to where Steve is still keeping him in the game. So even though Kuminga's been starting, like he spent the last fourth quarters mostly on the bench because Wiggins,
Jonathan Kuminga played 6 fourth quarter seconds today. And Andrew Wiggins played all 12 fourth quarter minutes.
And what about the last game? It was
so
the
what's
same.
Interesting like,
he
about
came
the
game, in for that block. At the end.
Yeah, exactly. He had the biggest like defensive play of the game. But I'm not looking at the box score. But I like that might have been like the only possession I remember him even on the floor. So
yeah, he played 28 minutes at OKC. Kuminga, then 28 minutes against Phoenix. Right, and those were like the. The games were like, you needed this athlete, right? Like, and then he starts and his minutes drop. 24 at the Clippers, 20 at Brooklyn. What was he tonight? Like 19? Like, it's just.
Yeah, 18, 19.
Yeah, it was like, wow. Like, so, I mean, I guess that's the ideal situation for Wiggins to kind of fight and play his way back.
By the way, you could play them in more lineups together. I almost think, especially with no Draymond, like your best defensive lineups would include both of them.
I do feel like Kuminga needs to be on the floor at the end of games because, I mean, I understand they're trying to write the season, but they also are doing the dual thing of developing Kuminga. Like you can't, they've lost sight of that for too long in this pursuit of games, and now they have this kind of perfect storm where they need to develop him. Like the urgency to develop him is there, but also him playing is actually what's best for the team. So it feels like they need to figure out a way to get him on the court. And that's a little tough because, you know, if Wiggins is going to play, you know, Clay, Steph, CP, that's 4. At that point, you know, he wants a big out there to be with him, whether it's, you know, Sarge if he's hitting his threes or Loon if he just needs a defender and rebounder, or tonight it was, you know, TJD for most of it. Like, I just feel like, man, some of those, I don't know how it's going to work out, but it feels like you just need Kuminga on the floor. You're going to need him to win anything significant, and in order for him to be good enough to perform at that level, he needs to be playing at the end of the games now. So that's interesting, like, how it's working out to actually hurt Kuminga even though he's starting.
Yeah, you know, but Kuminga, I mean, like a week and a half ago, 10 days ago, like Kuminga was basically out of the rotation, right? That felt like the low moment, and then suddenly he kind of burst. And I do think he needs to be guaranteed. At least, you know, he plays 18 minutes tonight. To me, that needs to be like the floor, like the absolute floor. Especially when
and he was Trey. Good. Like he was 5 for 7. He misses free throws, but 4 rebounds.
Yeah, 0-4, I think, on free throws. He was fine. And again, like I said, I'd like to see more creative lineups where he's together with Wiggins. You know, I think, you know, especially if Wiggins is playing like tonight, then suddenly you have like, well, they feel a little bit more athletic on the wing. But where else? I mean, storyline tonight. I do think Clay, I would say glossed over what Clay's doing a little bit early. He's like heating up. And I think that's.
Hey, you knew what I knew? He's going to have a good game in Portland?
How?
He started making a paper plane last night.
He may. I mean, he should be the MVP if you're just judging off him making paper planes. That's every post. Well, no, that's only like post games where he's feeling good. So maybe that's your point. His last three: 30 points on 9 of 15, 8 threes; 24 points on 7 of 19, 4 threes; then tonight, 28 points on 11 of 16, 5 threes. You know, over his last 12 games, which is like not like it's basically half of the season. It's 12 games almost. He's 41% from three on a pretty high volume. Like, you know, the defense is, you know, what the defense has devolved into at this stage of his career, obviously that creates hazards for the Warriors that I don't think is solvable. But he's, if you just look at his really the last half of this season that he's played so far, like he's shooting it like Klay Thompson from three. Like you said, still shot hunting a little bit, but like this is what you need from him, right? 28 on 11 to 16 tonight. Like, you don't get that, you don't win the game, but you got it.
I feel like it's even, I feel like tonight was even bigger than like just the fact that he made shots. He made big shots. Like, he was making those, the wheels are falling off, they're going to lose this game, and then here comes Klay with a big shot. And that's the part where you felt like, man, like that felt like Klay. That felt like the Klay that, you know, he's been trying to find for a while. I think he was like, what, 5 for 6 in the third quarter. And then here's the crazy part. Like, he missed his 2 threes in the fourth, but he had one bucket in the paint. And then he had that baseline fadeaway. Like, so he was going for the twos when the threes wasn't there. It was just like a smarter game outside of the couple heat checks. But man, he hit some big shots, especially with the way Steph was struggling. It felt like those were massive pressure. Klay will come through threes.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
So those three games I mentioned, you know, I mentioned the stats, have come directly after, I would say, maybe the low moment of, certainly not the low moment of Klay's career, because like the injuries are, right, especially the Achilles. But, you know, the low moment of this stage of his career, which is the benching in Phoenix, you know, and that was overshadowed because it's the same night that the Draymond thing went down, which, like, it's just crazy to think about that night in general. But, like, you know, like, Klay took that hard, and maybe it's just coincidence, you know, he's on a hot streak since. But, like, my question to you is, do you think the benching has led to this?
Absolutely. And it's why Steve should have did it earlier. I mean, I understood the idea. Like, I could see, you know, if this were a multiverse, I could definitely see the universe where you bench Klay and he just falls apart. I just don't think that was likely. I think Klay is a competitor. Klay's a professional. And even though he has his bouts with, you know, for lack of a better term, selfishness, like, he still wants to win above all things. I think this was a predictable outcome. Now, it's very possible that he could have tried to go for this and just not have it, but I don't think there's nothing about Klay that said he would just go, he would like tank it and be an emotional mess. Like, it was possible. I could see it, but I don't think it was probable. So this makes a lot of sense how he's responded to this. I mean, and I think you pointed this out on a previous podcast, like, even when he was struggling, it wasn't largely because like his shots wasn't falling. A lot of it was shot selection. A lot of it was him rushing, doing too much, trying to take people off the dribble. You know what I'm saying? Like, that type of stuff. To me, that felt more like the culprit than, you know, he just couldn't make shots. But when he took shots for a while, when he took good shots, smart shots in the flow, open, feet set, he made them at a very Klay Thompson rate, I would say. So I'm not surprised that he, after that, like, turned to a very smarter approach, right? Under control. And stop taking some of those like off one dribble fading, you know, tough twos. Like, he's basically cut those out, and it works. But to me, this was the more predictable outcome. What do you think?
Yes, I do think that the benching also kind of sparked this a little bit, but also like this is kind of the same time last year he heated up, and you know sometimes at this stage of their career, guys kind of got to play themselves to regular season shape, right? And I think some of it is that if you just kind of widen out to the last 12 games, it's like oh, like you know he is shooting 41% over like a chunk sample, so he's starting to shoot well. We haven't mentioned the play of the game, unless you have a different candidate. I would say it was Pajemski.
The player, right? Or play?
Play. Play so Warriors up two with, well, like four seconds left. Steph Curry, they're up one, right? Steph Curry hits the first. You assume he's going to hit the second to go up three. And I mean, I'm not remembering at the time. I think Portland had a timeout, and I assume they would have taken a timeout if Steph hits it, you know, to move it into the front court, set up, you know, a try to make a three scenario. But he misses the free throw. It's kind of a scramble. And I think smartly, they just let the action flow. Shaedon Sharpe gets a fast break out of it, basically, where everyone seemed a little shocked, like, oh, Steph Curry missed the free throw. And Shaedon Sharpe's getting to the rim to tie the game. And Brandon Pajemski, you know, this is kind of a risk to step in and try to take a charge with a second left in a 2-point game. You know, Shaedon Sharpe makes the layup and you get called for a block. That's ball game. You get called for a block and he misses. He has two free throws to tie. Like, it's a very risky play.
But he made that shot, by the way.
He did?
Yeah, he made it. Yeah, he made it. I thought he made it.
No, I don't. Well, I'm going to go find it as I'm, you know, setting the rest of it up. But, you know, he steps in, he takes a charge, which is monstrous. And it's, I mean, we'll get into Pajemski and you can detail or not detail as much about, you know, sounds like you're writing a story on him for the morning. It, like, that's his 11th charge taken this season, which is fourth in the NBA. Although I'm looking at the list, it's not, you know, loaded with defensive stalwarts. Do you want to know
the list? I thought it went in. It rimmed out, by the way.
But yeah, I thought so. Yeah,
rimmed out, yeah.
But regardless, like the point stands, like everything, like the risk of the play and the fact that, I mean, he, like, it was obvious enough that, like there wasn't, like, it didn't feel like Portland was like disputing it. Right. That's why he's starting, you know, in a nutshell, right?
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
I mean, my story is just about how Brandon Podziemski is literally in violation of everything we know about the Warriors. Like, they don't play rookies. They don't play rookies at the end of games. They don't put the ball in the hands of rookies. They don't sit veterans to play rookies. Like, there's no example of this. The only actual example when rookies got to like Cook was, you know, the 1920 season when they didn't have anybody.
I'll give you another example. This might, you know, kind of trigger some of the listeners. I feel like they gifted James Wiseman some minutes in his rookie
season. Yeah, they did gift him some minutes, but number one, it was short lived. Number two, he wasn't playing like this. He wasn't at the end.
Oh no, he certainly wasn't. But like for one of the things I found, started his first game ever after.
Yeah, he started. He averaged like 20 something minutes his first season, like 40 games.
Yeah, I mean,
he played 39 games. He was up there. He played.
Yeah, but he definitely got a shot. It's a completely different example. But I was just thinking of them actually, like when you talk about their code, like I don't, maybe they kind of broke it for him too in like a different way.
No, they did break it, but I also think they were coming off 15-20, and yeah. Or 15-50, and they were still kind of in that.
Oh, and also drafted him second overall, and you know,
and drafted him second overall. Yeah, so like he's come in and he's just. He's done what it seems like no other rookie has been able to do. He just fits the mode. I don't think he's necessarily better than the other ones, but for the coach he has, for the team they have, like he was clearly drafted by the Warriors for the Warriors. And we sat there and we were watching his highlights on draft night. We were like, what is this? But they clearly knew like the type of player they felt comfortable with, and he's that, and we're just seeing something we haven't seen before. Like we just
quicker than not only
and
I
even
imagine.
When they played Wiseman, they didn't trust him.
No,
right? They didn't. It wasn't like let's go to it. It was more like it was like they did it with gritted teeth. You know, like somehow this, you know, arrogant, like talented rookie comes in and they're like, yeah, man, like nobody's blinking that he's on the court because he's just brought like he just fits. It's very weird. If I'm Moses Moody and I'm Jonathan Kuminga, I'm like, what? But it's pretty obvious why this is happening. Like it makes a lot of sense why this is happening.
These are his rebound numbers the last, I think, 8 or 9 games. 8, 6, 5, 6, 11, 7, 5, 5. He's had 5 assists in 3 out of the last 4 games. He's had at least a steal in 7 of the last 8. He had 6 steals the previous 2 games combined. He's scoring double digits on the regular, 13, 12, 12, 20, 19, 10. This isn't just some like scrappy dude who stepped in for a charge at the right time so we can like glorify like, oh, you know, look at this like hustle play by this rookie. He's like producing like in the stat sheet. Like if you're a fantasy basketball player, you're probably like, wow, like who's this kid? Like pick him up. It's
until
impressive.
Recently, he wasn't turning the ball over either, which is a huge deal.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he had like 5 against Brooklyn. But what do you have? What do you end up with? Yeah. Just one tonight. Yeah. So it's just like, I mean, for his minutes, like he's not turning the ball over. I mean, I think a major difference is obviously the rebounding, but he handles the ball. He can handle the ball, and everybody can feel comfortable with the ball in his hands, and that just matters a lot for Steve Kerr. And it's given him a way to play. Like it's given him, you know, the trust of all these people because that's essentially Warriors basketball. You got to be able to dribble, pass, shoot. like dribble, pass, shoot. That's what you got to be able to do, and he can do it. And also, he rebounds. So, but we just haven't seen this. So it's really very unique to watch. I mean, look, we've seen Steph Curry take game winning charges. We've seen Andre Iguodala,
Draymond,
you know, a couple game winning strips. We've seen Draymond game winning defensive stops. It's very rare to see rookies on the court.
They really like him defensively, and to me, that's the surprise. that's been the surprise, because I mean, we watched the tape, the, you know, maybe we stereotype too, right? Let's be honest. Maybe it's, you know,
no, the awesome. Tape wasn't great.
Yeah,
the tape wasn't great, bro.
No, it wasn't.
Which but, is you know, fine. Again,
yeah. Like, you know, we also probably stereotype like 6'3", like white rookie. Like, I think it's a proper stereotype in a lot of ways, but like, you do not expect this guy to defend the way he has, but that's mattered. It's interesting. We should probably talk to the other rookie who was good tonight, right? What did Trace Jackson Davis finish with? I think he was like 6-9, 14 points, 8 rebounds, 5 offensive rebounds. Dive, you know, he had a lob dunk. He had a, you know, like I said, a dunk on a dive. He was active. They tried him 3 games ago against the Clippers, and he wasn't good. He played, I think, 6 first half minutes. They didn't play him the second half. They didn't play him against the Nets. They went to him tonight. I think part of it was like, you know, Looney, it was kind of a slower Looney night, right? You know, most nights kind of lately have been, but you're playing a young team. Second night of a back-to-back, I think they just tried to see what Jackson Davis would give him, and it was good. And I'm curious where it goes from here in the front court without Draymond. You know, you have a chance to, I think, poke him out there a little bit more and see what you have. And, I mean, it's clear, like, this is not breaking news. Like, it's just a dimension they don't have.
And it's so obvious, like, when it plays out, right? I mean, I know, look, Saric has been playing, like, well. He's been hitting his threes. Like, he's very valuable. He's the stretch big they need. But my goodness, if he is your backline center, it is a bucket for everybody every time. So when you get TJD in there and you see somebody actually protect the rim, you know, actually get big and be a presence, you realize how much they're like just trying to withhold and just hang on with Saric, right? You can see it. Like, it's kind of like it's just pretty obvious. Now you're looking at this like, look, he doesn't shoot. If he shot, he'd be the starting center if he could shoot straight something.
Yeah, I think the other thing is, and you saw it in the Clipper game, they're still like, it's a slow reaction, like, whoa, this league is a little overwhelming. And it's understandable. He's a rookie. I think he's going to be a very good player. I think, obviously, it was a good pick, good find where they got it. I think they have him on a good contract. I think he should play on certain nights. Tonight was an example. But the Clipper game, like, against, like, a crafty offensive team with Harden coming downhill. And and it was a bad 5 minutes. He was lost in that game, which is fine, right? Yeah. Like, tonight he was good. Tonight he was better than Looney. Like, that's pretty easy to say. I'm just saying there's, like, Where you're right is, like, when it does go well, you're like, man, could this team use that this consistently? But I also think it's a little unfair to assume he can give it consistently, especially against, like, good opponents, right? Blazers is a good team for him to play against. Clippers, a little bit spooky for him to try to defend against that team. You know, because all he's thinking about, I actually talked to him about it in the locker room before yesterday's game, just, like, defending Harden coming downhill. And, like, all he's thinking about is, like, verticality, get your hands away from him. It's like Wiseman really dealt with this a lot, right? You know, the way you would see him jumping to contest shots, but telling himself the entire time, like, don't foul, don't foul, don't foul. And then it would get him out of position to even get a defensive rebound, that type of stuff. I just think there's a rookiness to him that I think will show up against good teams, right? Like, they're playing the Celtics on Tuesday. Like, yeah, like, theoretically, you probably want to play him for an athletic standpoint, but also, like, it might be rough if you have a rookie center out there, like, staring at Jason Tatum and Kristaps Porzingis and Jaylen Brown and like that.
And by the way, what's the worst that happens in that situation? But the other team scores.
Well,
because that's literally what's happening with Saric as the center. No matter who they're playing,
and then Saric is
veterans. Literally,
I know what you're saying. I'm just trying to provide a little bit of the counter.
I get that. I know what you're saying. I feel like those problems. The problems that TJD has to deal with when it's Phoenix and you're dealing with, you know, switching out to Booker, right? Or the Clippers having to switch out onto Harden. Like, I think those are problems everybody's going to struggle with. But he obviously has his, like, issues, right? He's not perfect. I'm just saying, when he's out there, like, you can see the difference with like an athlete in the middle, right? You can see, I mean, you see that rebound he skied for, like that's nothing to do with who he's playing against. He just went and got the ball above everybody else. And Looney, while he gives you that kind of great rotation, the tough rebounder, and he doesn't give you that, you know, doesn't give you much on offense. And Saric gives you all the offense in the world, or at least he makes a lot of threes, right? And he's a good passer, but he gives you nothing on defense. I think TJD might be the good in between. The guy will give you a little bit of defense and a little bit of offense, right? He can do some things as far as rim protection, and he can do some things as the role man,
especially for Chris Paul,
flasher who can finish. Yeah, like so. Either way, with Looney and with Saric, they're squeezing out the good they do, and basically just kind of hoping and praying for the best on the other end of the court. Whereas when you see TJD, like he's the one big guy who has a chance to give you a little bit on both. And it just stands out when he does it. Like in the Phoenix game, he wasn't very good in the Phoenix game, right? I do think there's a part of that, but man, it just feels like 10 of those minutes a night, you know, you just start grooming him for something, and he's going to be really good just because he can play. He can give you something on both ends in a way that you don't get from Sarge. And look, even like when Simons is coming down doing his layup thing, like he wasn't stopping that. He was getting the and one too. So it's not like he's like, you know, shutting down the paint. I'm not saying he's doing that, but it just looks dramatically different when you have somebody who is capable of blocking a shot in the paint.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It just looks different. The best shot blockers without him on the court is probably Steph, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, they're, I think, second to last, 29th in the NBA in block shots. And I know that's not like the tell-all stat on rim protection these days. It's more, you know, there's like tracking numbers on what teams shoot at the rim, all that. But I don't think they're very good in any of those stats either. Anything else from this game?
So, Chris Paul, 2-for-7, 0-for-4 on 3. But he played 32 minutes off the bench. He had 8 assists. Are you concerned about his shooting, or is that not that big of a deal because of how well he's playing as a distributor and, you know, floor general and running?
He had one nice fadeaway.
It's a huge mid-range. Yeah.
Very important time.
Right. But it makes you think, like, they could really use that. They could really use him getting the bucket. They could use
if this team turns into the theory of what they want it to be and, like, gets to the playoffs and, like, has deep series, like, his mid-range jumper will matter in, like, in certain series.
Yes.
But that feels a long way away. I don't know. I mean, what is he? I'm going to it. He's shooting 40% overall, 33% from three. That's like way. That's not even just way below his career average, where he's 47% overall for his career, 37% from three. But even like last year, right? You know, he was 44% overall last year and 37% on threes. Like, I just think he'll shoot a little bit better. I think the averages a little bit like Clay will normalize. So I'm not.
I think those runs, one of the reasons they keep giving up these huge leads is because they don't, especially with Wiggins, like, struggling. You know, they like to go to Wiggins to calm things down, put him in a low block. But they just don't have very many places to go for those, like, rally-ending buckets. It's usually like, all right, let's do some more curls, some more screens. Let's try to get an open three. And, like, it feels like Chris Paul, one of his strengths is that he can get to that spot and hit that mid range when you just need a bucket. So yeah, I don't think it's a concern yet. But when he hit that dagger, like, it felt like, yeah, that's part of why they brought him here too, right? That's what they wanted from him, was to hit those big mid range shots. We've watched him hit so many times,
and then yeah, realized, he also, like, yeah,
he's really not hitting that shot.
Yeah, I mean, he also had 8 assists tonight, 11 assists last night.
Yeah.
You know, 62 minutes this weekend. That's like the number that's stunning.
Right? Yes. Like, I didn't realize he played 32 minutes tonight.
Yeah. So the day after Draymond gets suspended between the Phoenix LA games, and I was at shoot around in LA, this would have been Thursday morning. The suspension had dropped Wednesday night, and post shoot around, Steve Kerr and Chris Paul were sitting there for, I would say, a good 30 minutes, like deep in conversation. I don't know what they were talking about, but it just that it they've talked about how like important and like delicate a time like this post Draymond suspension has been for them, and particularly that day, you know, Wednesday night into Thursday in the Clippers game. And I only bring that up because it does feel like in this like post Draymond for however long it's going to be existence, Steve Kerr has decided to like lean into Chris Paul a little bit. And 62 minutes this weekend, like that to me more than anything just screams like Steve Kerr being like, Chris Paul is going to help guide us out of this.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of what he's here for sure. Like, they need that, and you can see him on the court. I don't know if he's more vocal or not. It just feels like he's more vocal. He probably would say he's not, but you can just see him doing his thing where he, you know, is telling people what they should be doing or where they should be. Like, yeah, it's interesting. It makes sense that he would be like that figure. It's probably what he's been waiting for. And considering the fact that he's not starting and a rookie is, there's probably this probably, this type
I'll,
of leadership.
I'll just say this. It was probably part of that conversation.
Yes. That I'm, yes.
That I'm talking about.
Well, I'm closing games, and I get to – I'm going to play a lot, and also, like, I'm going to be me then.
Yeah. How far away does the summer conversation / early season conversation about, like, Chris Paul starting or not feel?
Did it even happen? I don't even know if it happened now. Yeah. Like, it's that – that's like – I'm thinking maybe I dreamed all that.
I'm pretty sure he started, like, everyone on the team except for Chris Paul. That's, like, you know –
it's wild. TGND is next. He's going to start.
Yeah. Interesting week for them coming up. Celtics Tuesday night showcase game. You know, tough game for them. Obviously, they will not be favorites. And then a comfortable looking back to back on the home back to back coming the weekend. Jordan Poole's back Friday night, Wizards, and then Saturday, Blazers again. So I would say you come out of this weekend 2-1, which means you're 4-1 over the last five. You get the record from 10-14 to 14-15. You'd feel a little bit better heading into that Christmas game in Denver.
Oh yeah. One last thing I wanted to ask you. You were in a locker room, I'm sure. Is Steph? You think Steph's tired? He needed a game.
Well,
and do you see one of those games him taking?
Taken off?
Not the Boston game, clearly. But
yeah. No, I don't see anybody taking anything off unless like a tweak or an injury happens right now, because they're desperate. You know, like you can't just rest Steph because oh, he's tired, and then like you lose to Portland or whatever. Like, to answer your question, like, yeah, I mean, that was the whole story of the Nets game, right? And the way he had to like summon his energy, and like Steve Kerr admitting like the emotional distress. And by the way, I mean, I wrote about it, but like, Steph like changed up his entire pregame routine. Like, that's not a small thing. Like, you know Steph very well, obviously. Like, he is routine oriented. He's diligent about that. For him to upend what he was doing, to move his pregame routine, you know, more than 2 hours prior to the game, way before the game, for the sole reason of escaping the fans, escaping the noise, escaping people and demands and hands out, because we know like this isn't just some normal guy warming up. Like, you're out there during Steph warm-ups, like they're insane. That was him just telling himself, while also indirectly telling the world, like, it's been a lot lately, and it's not just the burden of like, oh, I gotta score 30 a night and try to get this team to the 10th seed. It's like everything trying to hold this franchise up right now is tough. So yes, to answer your question, I do think he's pretty exhausted, but no, I do not think he's going to sit a game, because he can't right now.
Sure you can. You got Chris Paul, man.
43 Chris Paul minutes. I mean, you know, Corey Joseph will get some run.
Yeah, Corey Joseph will get some run. Yeah, but, I don't think he'll sit either. I think he'd reject the notion, but you got to start to wonder what's best for the long term.
I mean, they have
you got the Wizards Blazers on a home back to back. Like, is there?
Well, it's
guess you can look and see when Detroit comes to town.
But the way like you say that I feel like the way you say that is like how the Kevin Durant Warriors would think. Like, you got Wizards Blazers back to back. Like, those aren't big games. Where, in my opinion, like, that's bigger than the Celtics.
So you saying sit Boston?
Yeah, exactly. Like, yes. Yeah. To be honest with you, I mean, the league would not.
I mean,
like
you can't
that.
Do that though because of Adam Silver.
Yeah. Well, then I mean, you're not going to do that regardless. And like,
nah,
he's
not sitting that game.
I'm just.
I don't think he's sitting any games. I'm just curious if,
like, you watch the game.
Maybe Rick Celebrini steps in and says he needs to get a game here.
There's not a team in the league that you can be like, Steph, sit. Like, you know, it's fine. They got
it. It's the Wizards at home.
You know, the Wizards were up, like, the entire game against the Suns tonight and, like, really should have beat the Suns, so the Suns squeaked it out late. Like, you know what's a disaster for the Warriors? If they give a Wizards home game away. You can't give that game away. So, yeah, Steph Curry should play.
I just don't think they would, but, I feel you, though.
You sure? You ever seen George Poole get hot and Jason?
It's been a while. It has been a while, buddy. No, that's all I got.
All right, me too. Everyone read Marcus on the website tomorrow, sounds like. So, and then we will talk to you probably post-Celtics here.
Yep.
All right, see you.
Post-2022 rematch.
All right. Yeah. Yep. Talk to you then.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.